Hi, my name is Marty, and I'm an alcoholic. And I misunderstood. I thought there was going to be another speaker, so I'm like, oh, okay, let's hear this other speaker. But I want to think this was a collective effort to get me here. You know, Stephanie's a very good friend of mine. Stephanie's direction and follow-up, and Bill's not here, but Bill, you know, got me squared away with the room and everything, and I'm just so grateful to be able to come and share my experience, strength, and hope. And this is really a treat. Welcome to all the newcomers and the chip takers. That's totally awesome. You know, I didn't do it the right way when I got here. I didn't take chips, didn't take a cake. I was 3 years sober, and I was working in recovery, and they kind of pulled a fast one. We went to take the clients to a meeting, and they said, and we have somebody taking a 3-year cake. I'm like, oh, cool, like that. And they're like, Marty. And I'm like, oh, somebody else would say Marty. You know? And I'm like, I get it a little late, you know. But I forgot what was I going to say? What did I say? Oh, anyway, congratulations to the newcomers. And the gift here is I'm hearing all this new stuff because I'm from Southern California, and Southern California is traditional that we read, you know, chapter 3 and chapter 5, and you have different readings, and it's really cool, you know, because I really believe everything that the big book says, but it's cool to hear different things, so... Thank you, everybody, for, you know, getting me here. And even my friend Colleen, who drove all the way up here. And if anybody wants to hear a funny story, ask her about condensation. And my sobriety date is May 5th, 1987, and for that I am truly grateful. It was not my intention to get sober because I really didn't think I had a problem. I knew he had a problem, and I knew my little kids had a problem. That's really what they kind of opened the door to the deal. You know, they're going to school, and one's in high school, one's in junior high school, and the high school counselor wants to speak to me, and I show up because I'm a good mom, and she says, your son has an alcohol problem. And I'm like, what? No, I don't think so. She goes, oh, yeah, he does. And she pushed across the desk a piece of paper. She goes, you need to take him there. And I was like so embarrassed, you know, and I said, oh, okay, you know, and I'm like, what, you know, and it was on the piece of paper it said Palmer Drug Abuse Program, PDAP. And there's a history with that. It was started back in Texas by John Bradshaw and what's your name, Carol Burnett, her kid was one of the first ones that went through that program. And they had brought it in 9 cars from Texas to, you know, Southern California. And it was like a kid and a parent program. And they just, for the children, they adopted the 12 steps, you know, because kids don't have anything to lose. We're paying for everything, you know. And so they kind of changed it around a little bit. And so I took them there. And I was shocked, you know, I was just shocked finding all the stuff out that they were doing. And I don't know how they could have been doing this stuff. I mean, just because their dad and I kept our plate of dope right underneath the couch, and there was always, you know, beer in the refrigerator, that didn't mean they could take it. Well, they were taking it. They were also selling cocaine. They were stealing our car, which we didn't know anything about because we were busy sleeping, you know, or shall I say we were passed out. And so, and, you know, the old man and I would be, like, arguing about, you know, I'd go to get in my car in the morning, and it would be on empty. And I would be like, how did that happen? I just put gas in it. Well, they were pushing it out of the driveway, and once it got, then they'd take off, and they'd push it back, and in the morning I'd come, and then I'd be like, it's on empty. And the same thing was happening with his van, and him and I were just, like, arguing at each other. Right now it's your father. And I remember, like, I had a flash of the boys, just like I had 2 sons, just looking at us, you know, like, what a couple of dummies, you know. So go through that program, and just how it is with treatment, it gets worse before it gets better. And that program, the parents were great, giving me advice and all this kind of stuff, and they just found it was a little bit too hard to do that, and they still kept sneaking out at night. And one night I got up and I thought, well, let me just see, and I went into the other room and they were gone. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I call the parent. You know, I'm still drinking and using like crazy. So I call the parent, and they go, lock up that place, clean it out. You know, they don't get back in. And I'm like, oh, okay, you know. My parents thought I was crazy. The old man thought I was crazy. And I kind of was crazy. You know, I worked at an insurance company, and they were very good to us. And every morning about 9:15 or so, this cart would come around to our desk down the aisle there, and had coffee and hot cocoa and bear claws and all kinds of stuff for us. And I just stood up, and I looked at the woman across the room, and her and I kind of made a little nod, and we were off to the liquor store. And her and I split a six-pack at 9:30 in the morning because I just really couldn't get through the rest of the day like that. And I did all my work in the morning because I'd go out for that lunch. And there was this little restaurant. It was in Santa Monica, and it was Carrillo's. And they had lunch and 50-cent margaritas, as many as you could drink. And so, you know, I started out, you know, with the lunch, play with the food a little bit, down a few margaritas, got to know the bartender, and then I kept coming. I was like, pop the lunch up, I'll take that, keep the margaritas coming. So by the time I got back to work, I was like, no good. So I did all my work in the morning, and so it gets worse before it gets better. We locked them out. At the end of school, they stayed out for the whole summer. The parents said, you know, just leave them alone. I turned them in. I filed a report on both of them and kept going to meetings and kept drinking, you know. Happy hour was my deal. And I was so whacked. I could tell the story. My ex-husband was way, way far away. You know, I just need to come home, get dinner going, and then I said, I need to go back to work. I have a lot of overtime. I need to go back to work. Well, I need to go back out and drink. And so, and I did this, thought of this on my own. I thought, you know, I've gone to all kinds of clinics. What's wrong with me? You know, doctors, I had great insurance and stuff. And, well, you're this, you're that. They were giving me anxiety medicine, this medicine, that kind of pills and stuff. And this was a long time ago, you know, because of my sobriety date. But so I figured, you know what, and he's always like watching me, you know, and so I started, I mixed up some spaghetti sauce and I was putting all these pills in there, you know, and I figured he would just go to sleep and then I could take off, you know. So the kids come home and they go, oh, right, Mom, we're having spaghetti for dinner. I go, no, I'll make you grilled cheese sandwiches just for that. So then he came home, you know, gave him a big thing of spaghetti, and he's like eating, and he's like, man, I'm tired. And I'm like, yeah, dude, you work hard, you know, for the family. And I go sit on the couch. And so he was sitting on the couch, and then he started just like, you know. And he knocked out. I tell the kids, all right, you know, 9 o'clock, you guys go to bed. I got to go back to work. And they're like, okay. Well, I'd forgotten that, you know, that's not very nice, and I'm not supposed to tell him that, but we still talk, you know, to the grandkids and kids and everything, and he was telling me about this movie, I Love You to Death or something like that. It's with Tracy Ullman and somebody else, and it's kind of the same scenario. And so he's telling me the scenario, and I'm like, oh, that's just kind of like what I did. He goes, what? And I go, oh, my God. I go, I'm so sorry. I go, I really wasn't supposed to tell you, but, you know, I used to do that to you sometimes because you were always, like, bugging me, and I just needed to get out and drink. He's like, oh, my God, you could have killed me. I go, no, I didn't want to kill you. I just wanted you to go to sleep, you know. I could go out and drink. And so I kept doing my deal. These guys were out, all out for summer, and I lived in Venice. I grew up in Venice, went to Venice High School. The oldest kid was in Venice High School. All my brothers that come from a big family, they all went to Venice. And they would see the boys around town. They'd go, man, we saw them over here, and da-da-da-da. We're going to do a blanket party. And I was like, no, no, no. You know, the parents had been getting to me, and they got to want to come home. You got to do it that way. You can't just go blanket party the kid, you know. Boom, boom, you know, you're coming. They'll run again, you know. So September comes around. School starts. And so, you know, I'm like, oh, my God, what are they going to do? And my other parents goes, call the school. I bet you they're there. And I'm like, what? Sure enough, I call the school. Yep, he's in there. Call the junior high. Yep, he's in there. And they go, where else are they going to go, you know? And I'm like, oh, my God. So I tell the high school, he's a runaway. I filed a report. You get that guy, blah, blah, blah. Call the cops. And they did. They call me back. they said, okay, we got him, come get him. And I go, and I could hear him in the background, hope you can tell him about that, and I go, no, he doesn't sound like he wants to come home. And so then they go, we're going to take, the cops are going to take him to jail, go take him to jail. They called me for 3 days straight from Pacific Division of Venice, and they're like, you got to come pick up your kid. I'm like, no, what, does he want to come home? I was like, nope, nope. Finally, on the third day, he goes, Mom, get me out of here. And I said, all right, but you got to go to treatment. And so he did. He did. And then it was so cool. I think this is where I kind of got the bug for doing counseling. We're sitting in the intake thing, you know, and some of you have been in that situation, and they're asking him all these questions. And he's saying stuff like, I could not get out of them with a crowbar. And he's just spilling his guts. And I'm like, wow, you know. And the guy puts the phone over to him. He goes, call your brother and tell him he's got to come in. Tell him what's happening. And he goes, but I don't know where he's at. And he looks at him. He goes, you know where he's at. He goes, call him. And so he did. And a couple days later, you know, that kid stayed there. And a couple days later, I'm coming home. I kept going to meetings. I was still drinking and stuff, but things were changing, you know. And I'm getting the groceries out of the car, and there's the kid over there at the corner. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I get on the phone to one of the parents. They go, let him come to you, you know, because I figured, go snag him, you know. And he starts walking closer and closer. Finally, he's right across the street, and he goes, you know, my brother called me, said it's not that bad in there, you know, maybe I should go in. And I go, it's up to you, you know. I was out there watering the lawn. I've never watered the lawn in my life. They're warming me. And he goes, maybe I should go. How, Mom, what do you think? I go, it's up to you, whatever you decide, you know. And he's like, okay, I'll go. And I was like, oh, my God. He said, well, come in, and Dad and I will take you, you know. So they both ended up going to treatment. And then in treatment, you know, they do that family thing. And so we're all in a circle, and they go, okay, let the Estradas come in the circle, you know. And I'm like, and so then that's when I heard it. Oh, my God, they were stealing our car. They were stealing our dope. They were selling cocaine. I was like, oh, my God, I'm so embarrassed, you know. But then everybody else had their turn. It was like, not that bad. And, you know, they're looking at us. You know, they're probably, I'm really thinking they weren't judging us, but I was feeling like, oh, my God, you know, because we're drinking and using like crazy. All my family's in construction. Everybody drinks. You know, my brother sold pot. I mean, it was just, it was crazy. That's just the way it was at our place, you know. And so come time for them to get out. And they call me for the discharge thing. They go, well, these guys got to go to meetings, and they're so young. They were like 14 and 12. You're going to have to, someone's going to have to take them. I said, okay, you know. And their dad was showing up to the groups and stuff, and even one day he showed up, and he was under the influence, and one of the counselors kind of busted them. She's like, I need the Estradas in the room. And so we were in there, and we're sitting there, and she goes, have you been drinking alcohol? She looks at him, and the two boys and I, we all look at him, like, huh? And he goes, yes. And she goes, don't you ever come on my unit again. These people are trying to save their lives and butt into them. We're like, oh, my God, look at that. And she goes, do you understand me? And he's like, yeah. And we're like, whoa, because he was kind of like the tyrant at our house, you know, but she put him in his place. And I was like, that's power. So then They get discharged, and I got taken to meetings. Well, we live on the west side. We have to drive all of, they were used to going to all different meetings, and so I would take them and drop them off and take them, go pick them up. And all this time, you know, things are happening at work, things are happening with my family, and my brother's getting sober, and I'm like, you know, everything's falling apart. And it just happened that one day I just hit my knees, and I just asked God, you know, help me. I don't know what it is I need. I don't know, but just help me. Help me do this. My kids are falling apart. This is, you know, this is a mess here. And so I'm taking them to the meetings, and I think, you know what? I'm not going to drive all that way back and forth. And so I sit in the back. I said, yeah, I'm just going to stay and sit in the back. You know, you guys were really nice to me, and you always said hi and offered me coffee. And some of the better meetings had, you know, like, food, snack food back there, you know? And so I was like, oh, this is cool. You know, I get my little plate of snack food and my coffee. I was set, you know, and the speakers were great, man. They had great speakers. I was so fortunate to come in to the program at the time. They had, there was this guy called Serenity Sam. Oh, my God, he was so funny. I was laughing so hard, and you know how it is, maybe for some of you, like it was for me. I hadn't laughed in a long time, and there was that guy, then there was this, there was just people that were funny, and I thought, wow, this is pretty cool, you know, and then there was this speaker that got up and said, you know what, all you people back there in the shoe section, and I'm like, they sell shoes here? And he goes, you people in the back row, you're all in the shoe section, you slippers and loafers. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm not. What's a slipper and a loafer, a shoe? And I'm like, oh, my God. So from then on, I sat up in the front. He wasn't going to call me a slipper and a loafer anymore. And, you know, we have our own lingo, and if you're not, you know, up to it, you don't know what the heck they're saying, you know. And they kept talking about the ABCs, and I'm looking around the room. You know how they have in classrooms, they got the ABCs up there? I'm like, where are the ABCs? I don't get this. And then he talks about, you know, the broad highway, join us on the broad highway. And I said, well, that's good, that's inviting, you know. And then the next week some guy would come and he goes, but if the path gets narrow, you know. And I go, is that after the broad highway? And there wasn't anybody I could ask because I wasn't going there. For me, I was just dropping the boys off, you know. And then once in a while I'd look around the room and I go, where are the boys, you know? And so on the drive home I go, where were you guys? I was looking for you. And they go, we're doing fellowship in the parking lot, Mom. You don't have to be in the meeting. And I go, really? How does that work? You know, they have a meeting outside or something? And so then one day, you know, I was coming home every day. I stopped going to happy hour. Coming home, making dinner real fast. Okay, what meeting are we going to now? And they're like, we don't want to go to a meeting tonight, Mom. And I'm like, what? I go, but you guys have to, because we don't have to go every night. I'm like, oh, wow, you know, what am I going to do? Because now I want to go to the meeting. You know, I like what I was hearing. I could kind of identify with what people were saying. And, you know, I went to the meeting on my own. And while they were sitting there, because they were talking about a sobriety date, and I kind of got what a sobriety date was, but I didn't get when the guy goes, and if you get it, don't lose it. And I go, well, why would you lose it? I mean, you know, you get it. And so then he was explaining what that was, the sobriety date, and I thought about it, and I hadn't had a drink in 3 days. And that was a freaking miracle, because, I mean, I thought about it all the time. From the time I woke up, I would be lying in my bed, and I was awake consciously, but I didn't want to open up my eyes, because what that meant when I opened up my eyes was I had to do the whole freaking thing again. The whole thing about, okay, I'm not going to drink, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to, and it was all gone. Once I hit that liquor store, it was all gone. And I didn't want to keep doing that. I was sick of doing it. So I said, okay, I'm doing this on my own. It just so happened that there was a continuing program for that, for aftercare. The boys were going to that. Their counselor, I've seen him at meetings, like recently, about a year ago, still at meetings. Their counselor, mom had an apartment, like she ran an apartment, and I was telling them, you know, I really want to do this sobriety thing, but their dad drinks, and I don't know if I can handle that, you know, and he said, well, if you're thinking about moving out, my mom runs an apartment complex, and there's an empty one bedroom, you know. So I told their dad, you know, I think I want to do this sober thing. He's like, really? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, I go, do you want to do it? We could do it together. And he's like, no. I'm like, oh, darn. I go, but I can't live here. You know, I just can't do that. And he goes, well, goodbye. And I was like, whoa. So I got the apartment. Then I went down and, you know, I told the boys, you guys could stay here with your dad or you could come with me. And they're like, they were still doing the sobriety thing, running around. They would smoke like a pack of cigarettes a day. They'd go out for coffee with their friends. And since they weren't like drinking or using, I really didn't feel like I had to be real strict with them. And they would come home from, you know, they'd go to a meeting and some other mother would pick and take up. And then they'd go to Denny's or Norm's or someplace. And then they'd come in and they'd go, Mom, I had 32 cups of coffee tonight. And I was like, oh my God. And then we'd go to these dances, and it was just the kids and the parents, and we were all dancing together, and it was just, it was really good, you know. So I thought, okay, you know, we can do this deal. And I told them, you know what, if you guys come with me, this is a sober apartment. Nobody comes in here drinking, nobody, and using. Needless to say, I moved, like, I live six, my parents lived here, I lived six blocks up. When I moved out, I moved six blocks that way. And, you know, I announced to my family that I'm sober now, and they're like, it's about time now. They're like, really? And I said, yeah, Dad, I'm an alcoholic. He goes, oh, no, baby, you're not an alcoholic. You're just crazy. And I'm like, Dad, you can't fix crazy, you know? I really, really felt once I heard, you know, when I got to get to that deal where they talk about the phenomenon of crazy, I really identified with that. And I said, that's what the deal is. That's why I can't stop. You know, that whole obsession kicks in. And so, you know, since I made that big announcement to my family, nobody's coming over. If you're drinking, nobody came over. We lived there for 2 years. Nobody came to visit us. And but we were hanging out together, and we were doing good. Their dad had moved back to Ventura County. I'm living in L.A. County. Moved back to Ventura County, and we said, okay, we're going to try and do it again. You know, I'm sober. That's separate. Da-da-da-da. I moved to Ventura County. People were really cool about getting me hooked up with a group already over there. I'd go on the weekends and go to meetings and tell them what the deal is. I'm moving up here, and so I had a support group there. And one of the first meetings I got hooked up with was called What the Big Book Says. And it was this little man started it, and he did like this manuscript, this book, and we had to read the book, we had to do these homework, answer these questions, and it was held at Camarillo State Hospital before, it was just switching over, they still had patients there, and for the longest time I was afraid to go to that meeting because I was still thinking that I was crazy, you know, and I thought, it's on this big campus, now it's Channel Islands University, but in this big campus, and you drive in, I thought, you know, I'm going to drive in there, and I'm going to take a wrong turn, and I'll end up on one of those units, and I'm going to try and tell them, I'm not crazy, and they're going to go, right, you know, and so I finally shared that with somebody in program, and they go, well, take somebody with you, and I was like, oh my God, I could do that, so I did, and I started going to that meeting, and you have to do your homework. And so, you know, they say, okay, now we're going to get down to the causes and conditions and whatever. And the purpose for that meeting was to dispel the mixed and garbled message you get around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so the guy would say a question or start talking about something, and I'd raise my hand. He goes, oh, okay, Marty, did you do your homework? And I'd go, no. Well, then you can't talk. And I'm like, gee, I don't like that. You know, and I tried it a few times, and so I was forced to do my homework. And so I did my homework, and, you know, things started making sense. You know, he talked about the causes and conditions. He talked about the manifestations of self. And this was a little old guy, and he was really sweet. And I was still kind of, you know, cleaning up. And he says, and I'm like, manifestations of self. And he goes, okay, you know. He goes, have you ever grown tomatoes? And I'm like, no, Mike, I've never grown tomatoes, nor do I ever want to grow tomatoes. What the heck does it have to do with the big book? He goes, well, what do you grow tomatoes? He goes, they grow up on a stalk. And he goes, and they get worms. And I'm like, what the hell? And he says, and the worms eat the plants, so you want to get rid of those worms. But you can't find the worms because they look exactly like the stalks. So what you do is you look for the manifestation of the worms. And I'm like, okay. And so then he says, so you look on the ground and you watch the droppings, the manifestations of the worms. And then when you find it on the ground, you look up and there's the worm. He goes, that's what we're going to do here. We're going to find the manifestations of self. What does it look like when you're sad? What does it look like when you're angry? What do you do? And I was like, oh my God, this is like really deep stuff. And he used to, and it was hard for me to get it. He'd come, I was one of those fortunate people to be able to work at Central Office as a paid employee, and I learned so much there. He would come and bring lunch and sit and talk with me and help me. I cussed a lot then, I still do, but not as much. And I'd tell him, what the frick are you talking about, Mike? You know, and he was an old guy, and he'd laugh. And I was, oh, like that. And then he'd have a little problem laughing. And I'd go, Mike, clear your throat. I can't understand you. And so then he would help me, you know, do that. We got to the part where we're doing the inventory and we're Mrs. Brown or Mr. Brown with his wife or something. And so he goes, okay, Marty, what would we do? What would we do in this situation? I go, well, if somebody was messing around with my husband, I would tell her after I kicked the, you know, mud out of her. I would tell her, da-da-da-da. And then I'd tell the old man, blah-blah-blah-blah. And he's like, oh, that's it. He goes, no, let's think of another way, you know, and I'm like, oh, brother. And so then he goes, what about if we sit down with both of them and ask them, is this what, or sit down with them and ask them, is this what you want? Is this, would you rather be with that person? And I'm like, oh, yeah, what lifetime is that? And he goes, and if they say yes, then we say, what can we do to make it easier for them, for you? And, you know, I was always giving him grief and slack and stuff. And so I go, okay, Mike, yeah, I'll agree that that would be the nice way to handle it, but that's not the way I would handle it. He goes, well, I go, who would handle something like that? He goes, people that want to save their lives. So I was like, oh, brother. And so, you know, he continued to help me with meetings. I'd start a meeting, and I was having problems. He'd help me rewrite it so that it would stop the chanting, would do all this stuff, and he was totally awesome. And then they started talking about, you know, Mike's dying of cancer. And I go, what? And then they go, yeah, that's why he's always coughing. He's got all that stuff. And I was like, oh, my God. I was always so crazy about Mike, man, man. And he'd take me out to eat and stuff, and he'd sit down at a table, and the waitress would come over, and she'd go, well, would you like something to drink? And he'd go, oh, no, I have to be home by Christmas. And the waitress would laugh, ah, and I'd be like, Mike, that joke is so lame, you know? And he says, you know what, Marty, wherever you go, he goes, if you have the opportunity to make somebody's day a little bit nicer, he goes, do it, just do it. Turn that situation around, whether it's the, you know, clerk or whoever it is. You see somebody stand up at a meeting trying to take their coat off, you help them take your coat off. You're going to go get a cup of coffee, you ask the person next to you if they want a cup of coffee. He goes, just make their road a little bit lighter. You can do that. I was like, oh, God. And I saw this guy doing it in the meetings, and I was like, yeah, right, Mike, right, right. He ended up dying, and his memorial service was totally awesome. You know, the people, the things that happened, and I called my sponsor and I told her, you know what, it's awesome what they're saying about him. You know, they'd go to visit him and he would ask, they'd go, Mike, you know, he's dying of cancer, and they go, Mike, how are you? And he goes, I'm all right. You know, he goes, but I remember your daughter was trying to get into college. How's that going with her? And then the person would start talking about that, and then before you know it, it was time to go. And he goes, I never even asked the guy or, you know, talked to him more about how he was doing. He was always able to turn that around. And I told my sponsor, I want that. You know what? She goes, keep doing what you're doing, baby, and you'll get, you know, you'll get that too. And it was really cool. About 2 years after he passed away, we're going to go to the racetrack, you know. So I go out to the car. I forget why. And I was looking for some change, you know, in my husband's truck. And I look on the floor because he always throws the change on the floor. And then I look up in the ashtray and there's a rubber. A package condom. A Jimmy. No, I'm just kidding. And I love how denial works. This is honest to God, swear to God's truth. I picked it up and I go, I need to ask him what he uses these for. And I put it back. We went to the racetrack 2 weeks later. We're eating dinner and I go, hey, I remember, you know, the day we went to the racetrack, I go, I went into your truck to get something and blah, 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 and there was a condom in your ashtray, and he's just looking at me like, and I go, what do you use those for? And he looks at me and he goes, you know, don't play. And I go, I'm not playing, I'm asking you a question, and then he hit me. And I was like, oh my God. We've been married for a long, long time, and I was like, oh, and I was just like, he started, I go, do, 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 do. I called my sponsor, and I was on the phone with her for like 3 hours, and we got down to what I needed to do was when I was able to ask them, to sit down and ask them, you know, what's going on. By that time, I was all hooked up in my meetings. Well, she was haranguing me about going to a woman's meeting. I had gotten hooked up at a woman's meeting, which totally saved my, you know what, because, I mean, who hasn't that happened to, you know? And so all the women are helping me out, and we finally sit down, and I ask him, I said, okay, you know, what do you want to do? And he goes, well, you know, I want a divorce. I'm like, really? What can I do to make this easier for you? He goes, you're fucking nuts. And I said, yeah, I am. And so that's what happened, you know. And about a month later, the AA moving van pulls up, you know, 9 cars and trucks. And, you know, I made food for them because they were going to move me. And I opened the garage and they're all there, and a friend of ours, he was on crutches, he comes, I go, what are you doing? He goes, I just wanted to be here for support. I go, get out of the way. And they're like, Marty, where's the boxes? I go, boxes? Somebody goes, never mind. They get on the phone, okay, I got a boxes. We're going here, da da da. They just threw my clothes like in the bedspread, tied it up, you know, and they said, don't ever say you ain't got nothing to wear. I was out of there, like, because we wanted to make the new meeting, right? So all my stuff over to the other place. There was a bunch of people there that just helped me start putting it away, because they said, if we don't help you, it'll be sitting here 6 weeks from now, which is so true. And I actually moved three more times, and same deal, man. You tell them you got to move, and everybody shows up, and everybody, it's done. And when I finally bought a condo, and they were in there, and it was the most awesome thing. We were all holding hands, and we said a prayer, and, you know, how do you do that? How could I get to do that? Get people to be so supportive and right there, not ask for anything, just be there to support me, you know, husbands, wives, friends, and just, you know. And where I was moving from was about, you know, I lived at the beach, it was about 25 miles away, then they had to come back, and we had to make it to the new meeting, you know, so it was really awesome. I lost my sponsor August in the summer. She was my sponsor for 21 years. And she just did it, you know. When that thing happened with my husband, she was like, you know what, baby? She goes, if you do as we suggest around here, you're going to come out of this smelling like a rose, and you won't have to apologize for your behavior. That's what got me. Because I was always apologizing for my behavior. You know what? I don't like the way you look. Oh, damn, my damn, my damn. You know, I'm sorry. And I thought, okay, you know, and I did. I didn't raise my voice once. Didn't argue. Left the majority of the stuff with him. You know, she said, you're going to be all right. You are going to be all right. He called me a week after I moved out. And he said, I need your help. I was like, what? He goes, everybody that's supposed to help me moved out, flaked on me, and I don't have anybody to help me. I don't know what to do. I was like, you know what? I'm on my way to the new meeting. I'll call you back later. So I go to the meeting, and I'm telling everybody, you know, we're setting up, doing stuff, and you know how they kind of like half listen, you know. And then they stop and they go, if I called you and asked for help to move, what would you do? I'd go, help you. Help the guy move, would you? And I was like, oh. So I did, you know. I showed up and I helped him move. Because that's just what you show me around here. I have a really good life. You know, great friends. Wonderful support system. I have a great job. I have a part-time job where I work with DUI offenders. I love it. It's in LA County. So LA County is with that. It's a pilot program, LA County, Alameda, Sacramento, there's another county. the pilot program. Even a first-time DUI offender gets the breathalyzer interlock put on their car. There. Is it Tulare? Yeah, Tulare County. Oh, here it is. They hate it. And I just love it, man. They're like, we got to hump. We got to do this. I just love it, you know. And so all of that stuff. And what I did was I showed up here. I did as you suggested. I worked the steps. I truly believe that that's why I get to stay sober, because I work the steps and I continue to work the steps. I have these awesome women in my life that I sponsor, and I just showed up to this one because I wasn't able to hook up with her. I went to her house today and dropped off her apartment and dropped off her Christmas present. She's got a little boy, because that's what she got when she got out of prison. And they're totally awesome. What they're doing, she was in a shelter. She got a job from the shelter. She moved from the shelter to this apartment. She's managing. She goes, I have to dip into my savings. I go, how much you got in that savings? I don't have any, you know. Can you share it with me? She's doing great, you know. She's trying to get ahead at work. And it's because of this program. I get to walk through all those things with her. You know, she's drank a couple of times. And we've had to have a talk about that, you know, and I'm just not into that firing business, you know. I don't know, but I never learned too much when I got fired, you know. And so I say, you know what, you got to make a decision. What do you want to do? So we work the steps, we do that, and as a result of that, I end up with this great life, you know. I truly believe that you get exactly what you need here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You just show up, you do the deal. That thing about intense work with another alcoholic, that always works for me. I forget it sometimes, but it always works for me. I thank everybody for sitting here so quietly and patiently and giving me your attention. Thank you. Thanks for driving up with me. God bless.